Hello again and welcome back. I'm sure many in our audience know the name Elaine Vietz. It was a long-time byline in the Post-Dispatch. Her name can also be found below the title of more than 20 novels. She has two mystery series going at the same time, her Dead End Job series and the Josie Marcus Mystery Shopper series. Her eighth Josie Marcus book, Murder is a Piece of Cake, set in St. Louis, is just out. And Elaine, who has won several prestigious mystery writing awards, by the way, is with us to talk about it. So nice to see you again, Elaine.
Oh, it's good to be home, Don.
I don't know how you have time to go on the road at all. I mean, my God, you have spent so much time in front of the computer or word processor.
It's nice to get out and see people. I spend all day, you know, staring at a computer, and now I get to actually talk to live people.
You know, I had exactly the same comment from another author who was in earlier this week and said he loves to get out because it's a lonely profession, isn't it?
It is. Don't feel real sorry for me. My commute's down the hall, but you get isolated.
Yeah. Well, this is a little different slant this time with Josie. Matrimony is in the picture, as I understand it.
It is. She gets married. She's been dating the veterinarian, Dr. Ted Scotsmeyer, for three books. It's time. But I wanted the challenge of writing a mystery with a married couple because Sue Grafton has always said that she doesn't want to marry off Kinsey Millhone because she doesn't want to write that kind of dialogue. But I do feel it is possible if happily married characters. So that's what I'm going to try to aim for.
You mentioned Sue Grafton. Is she one of your favorites?
Absolutely.
She is certainly one of mine. I really enjoy reading her material. Do you have any difficulty, Elaine, keeping your characters apart? I mean, you've written 11 of the one series and 8 of the other. Two different women, two different characters, two different kinds of settings. Is this a problem for the author to keep them straight?
No, because they're in two very different areas. St. Louis is nothing like South Florida. My Dead End Job series is set in South Florida, which is very weird and wonderful. And St. Louis is totally different. It's a grounded city. People know one another. And if I wanted to know something about a neighbor in two telephone calls, I could find out where they go to church if they don't go to church, how much they drink, and who their families are. Florida is totally disconnected. You don't ask about your neighbors. And that is why it's so easy to keep these series separate.
So why are you living in Florida?
Weather's better.
But you can't lose that St. Louis touch.
No, I really still look at the world from a St. Louis Midwest viewpoint. And even in Florida, that's how I write my books.
You know, you wrote a column for so many years, and I'm not going to be indelicate and say how many you spent with the Post-Dispatch, but it was a long time.
25, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's the number that I have. That is a long time. What's the difference between writing a column on a regular basis and sitting down to that, must grind out some words today for this next novel?
The novel's easier, even though I do two a year. I write when I'm in full writing mode, which will happen when I get back. I'll turn out 1,500 words a day. But it's creative, whereas with a column, that's creative, but I have to do interviewing. So it's dependent on who's at home, who's available. After I do the research, did the person happen to have a record, and so therefore their story is no longer funny because they're wanted by the cops. These are all issues that don't happen when you write a novel. And so turning out four of those is like having a newborn baby. I am constantly with four columns a week on call. I never went on vacation, really, because I had to write the columns before I left town.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not surprised that we have people calling in already want to talk to you, but we have Ann and Clayton. I want to bring her in because I think her question deals exactly with what we're talking about. So, Ann, if you're there, go ahead.
Yes, I'm very interested in your daily discipline and what kind of computer you might use. I'm in the market for a laptop, I think, and I'm just thinking, oh, this is the life, right? I just admire you so much.
Well, the computer that I use is an ancient tower computer. It's not a laptop because laptops, if you spend a lot of time on them, you hunch over and hurt your back. And so I have a screen that's up high because you're going to have neck problems. And I get up in the morning. I have breakfast in bed, which I make, not my husband. And then I go to work, and I immediately know that I am going to go to work as soon as I check email. And an hour later, having looked at all the funny cat videos, I settle down and I write until noon. Then I take a break, and I come back, and I write from 1 to 3, and then I take another break, and then I write from 3 to 7, and then I have dinner and work out and watch a movie.
You know, I'm still trying to process the image of you getting up out of bed, going, making breakfast, and then going back into bed to eat it. It's not exactly living in the lap of luxury, is it?
Well, in a way it is. I mean, I'm not eating on the run, and I like to read and eat, scratch my cat, and have breakfast. Don't tell my mom. She thinks that's insanitary.
No, we'll keep it just between us, Elaine.
Okay.
Right, right. Let's take another call. Barbara in Town and Country wants to talk to Elaine Vietz. Go ahead, Barbara.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Elaine, I was the topic of one of your columns. I'm Babs from the South Side.
Oh, my gosh. Hi, Babs.
I don't know if you even remember, but an elderly neighbor hit my garage with her car, and she told me as my garage has just practically totaled, that she had to leave because she had a hair appointment and had to get to the bank.
I think she told that to the police, too, if I remember right.
I was surprised he didn't take her license. But very nice chatting with you. And I do have a question. What do you miss most from your years writing about South St. Louis?
I miss the interaction of the people. I used to go every morning for breakfast at Uncle Bill's. And people would stop by and talk. They would tell me stories. I'd joke around with the waitresses. And I really missed that. Some mornings I would be in worse shape than others. And someone went up to Marilyn, the waitress, and said, "Is that Elaine Vietz?" And she says, "The guy wants to know if that's you." And I said, "Tell him it's her older sister."
Well, very nice chatting with you. I wish you well.
Thanks.
Barbara, thank you. Thank you so much for the call. With regard to Murder is a Piece of Cake, I've not read it, I must confess. I just had it put in my hands a couple of moments ago. And part of the reason for that is because it's published in New York and they're having such difficulties on the order of what we were talking about earlier.
Right. The offices of Penguin in New York were closed for several days and they're just starting to get back.
Yeah. Well, let's hope them a speedy recovery. My God, it's what an awful, awful situation to go through. But as I understand it, in this Murder is a Piece of Cake, you're taking on the wedding business industry, if that's the correct way to put it.
Well, in a way I am, because Josie wants a simple St. Louis wedding. And by simple, I mean she gets married at the Jewel Box. And then they go to a sort of center, a dining, you know, one of those centers for weddings. She has a mother-in-law in Boca who does not follow the standard advice to mother-in-laws, which is sit down, shut up, and wear beige. Mother flies in on her mother-in-law, flies in on her private plane, and is going to organize Josie's wedding. And she wants to give her all the things that a proper wedding should have, including chair covers at the reception. Because you do not have naked chairs if you're rich. She doesn't want Josie to have pots of poinsettias because she should have big grand flowers. And Josie kind of worries about the effect on the environment. And she really doesn't want her son marrying this down-market daughter-in-law, but she can't do anything about that. Mm. Josie wishes her mother-in-law was locked up, and she gets her wish, except her mother-in-law is arrested for murder, and now Josie has to free her or she can't get married.
You know, I've had occasion in the very recent past to go to a number of weddings, all wonderful events, and we wish, of course, everyone well. But sometimes I get the sense that weddings are a little bit out of control these days in terms of the planning for them, the... My wife and I have come to calling it invoicing because they're very expensive propositions, not only for the father of the bride, but for the guests who attend them. What's your take on what's going on these days?
I think it has gotten out of hand. I mean, people say that it is, you know, the finest day of your life. It's not. It's the day you get married, which could be a really good day. But you've got, if you're lucky, years afterwards together. So it's the start of what you hope will be a very happy time in your life. But this whole thing with the bridezilla, those didn't exist. I've been married 41 years, and We didn't have bridezillas. Those were rude people, and they were not catered to. And you did not order your bridesmaids around. What you said was basically, do you have $100 for a really ugly dress to be in my wedding? I would really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, and it seemed to work. If the marriage took for 41 years, it shows that it works. Right.
It does. And my feeling on weddings now is sometimes the length of the wedding is inverse proportion to the amount spent on it.
Yeah. Also, the amount of time planning for these things. I mean, it's not like they're thrown together over a period of months. Sometimes it's closer to a year or more.
Well, I also read that newly married couples often do not have sex the first night of their wedding because they're too exhausted from the planning. What kind of wedding is that?
You know, I don't think I'm going to go there.
Okay.
We'll just let that stand. And
you can watch Don blush on radio.
Even you're blushing.
I'm blushing
and
too,
don't,
yes.
And don't tonight. You've got something going tonight I want to talk about. But first, let's bring in Jerry calling from O'Fallon. He wants to get into the conversation. Jerry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. I really miss your columns. Both you, Bill McClellan, and a handful of other people have that particular eye and ability to, with just a comment, if you really want to know the history of St. Louis, looking at the bulk of the newspaper isn't going to tell you much if you go back in the past. But I think looking at the columns and the people that you describe are kind of a microcosm of the bigger picture, and that's a very unique gift. I've always admired that. And in the couple of books of yours I've read, I kind of see the same, a good writer, I think, is like the late L. Hirschfeld, with just a few drawn lines, he can make a very accurate portrait of someone. And I also get your comment about I'm working both on a book and on a documentary film, and it's much easier to be working on written material because you do have to, work your schedule around trying to get someone to get them in to be interviewed, to do the editing, and it always involves other people. So I understand your comment from earlier in the show, but please keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Jerry is a regular caller. And, you know, Elaine, the staying power of the written word and of the people who write them is something that I find quite remarkable. I mean, you've not been in St. Louis writing a column for how many years now, 15 years, something like
20.
That? 20. Has it been 20 years
20
already?
20 years.
And people I've talked to mentioning that you were going to be on the program today all know who you are and who you were as a columnist in the Post-Dispatch. I find that remarkable.
St. Louisans are remarkably loyal. Yeah. I've lived other cities, and I've never met a city where they were extremely good to me, and they've not forgotten me, and I think that's a testimony to our city.
What do you think, as someone who's been removed from this for a while, of what's going on with the newspaper world today?
I think that what's happened to the big newspapers, many of them, and my husband's a newspaper reporter. He writes for papers owned by the Tribune, but they're community papers. And many of the big papers have lost their sense of community. They've lost the ability to touch people's lives, like they were talking about in Joplin. And when you do that, you're dead. And so they are slowly, they are dying of sclerosis. Don covers, my husband, he covers neighborhood associations. And that sounds like a dull job, but that is where the action is, and that's where the people literally live.
You know, another Don Corrigan. I don't know if you know him or remember him from,
yes,
from your days in St. Louis. He works for the Webster Kirkwood Times, and he says that is the future of newspaper journalism, is community papers, because people are really plugged into local news, and that's what they want. They want to know what's going on down the street. So that may be the salvation, if you will, of the printed word newspapers.
Don's paper is the only part of that particular group of newspapers that's making money. Yeah. Because it covers community news.
Well, you got out just in time, I guess, didn't you?
Yeah. Into something that may be even more confused. publishing.
Well, you're certainly prolific at it. Let's talk about this contest that is being waged tonight with regard to the bridesmaid dress contest, all in conjunction with your book. You're going to be – I'll give the full list in just a moment, but you're going to be at the St. Louis County Library tonight. Is that correct?
Right, the one across from Frontenac.
That's right, right by Highway 40 there. Tell us what that's all about and how people can get involved.
I'm giving very good prizes, St. Louis prizes, for the best and the worst, the prettiest and the ugliest, gorgeous, most outrageous wedding dresses. And because wedding dresses are something that are bridesmaid dresses. And so these are most outrageous bridesmaid dress and most gorgeous bridesmaid dress. Bring your photos if you haven't had time to submit them. And we're going to vote tonight, so bring your fans to help vote you into these prizes, which include things like a VIP tour of Schlafly Bottle Works, dinner for two at the Fountain on Locust, a chocolate tasting party at Cacao, and Gooey Louie's cheesecake.
I'll be there in my dress. Would you anticipate that some people are likely to show up tonight in those dresses?
If you show up in the dress, the first three people who do get a free copy of Murder is a Piece of Cake.
All right. Well, this is happening tonight at the St. Louis County Library. That's going to be happening at 7 o'clock. And while we're mentioning that, let's also talk about some of the other things that Elaine Veitz is going to be doing. By the way, we have a link to the library website and information on all those other appearances. One is at the Festus Library. That's going to be happening tomorrow morning. The Maplewood Library on Friday evening, is that correct?
4 o'clock.
And Barnes & Noble on Ladue Road on Saturday morning.
11:30 to 1:30.
We'll have that information on our website. The other series that you do deals with dead-end jobs. Now, you do these jobs yourself as kind of research for these books, right? Are you still doing that?
I'm not doing that. I've had to transform my character into a private eye because where she still works the dead-end jobs, but I can no longer work them because there aren't any. In this economy, even low-wage jobs don't exist. And if I am, I'm not going to take a job for 6 weeks for research when someone seriously needs money. So in this case, my character works them, and I work the first 9 books. I work those jobs.
Tell us about some of those jobs. What's the weirdest one that you were associated with?
Telemarketer. I sold septic tank cleaner.
Didn't you have a choice to do something else?
That's really why it's called a dead-end job.
Do you remember your pitch?
Yes.
Yeah.
Tank Titan 2000 eliminates odors, large chunks, and wet spots.
Good Lord.
I sold it. I'm mortified to say I sold it.
What about some of the others? That one is just too much.
I was a hotel maid, and yeah. I made 38 beds, cleaned 17 bathrooms, and the honeymoon jacuzzi. I worked for a South Beach hairstylist, and I fetched heavy magazines. I worked at a country club. And
that's a little more like it, as far as I'm concerned.
I hated it.
Really? Why?
I don't like dealing with rich, spoiled people. Uh-huh. They were nasty. I mean, I thought the club motto should be, "Do you know who I am?" I really liked working at a bookstore, which I don't consider a dead-end job. But that was one of my first ones.
How much time would you have to spend in these jobs in order to feel that you had what you needed to do the novel?
The shortest time was 6 weeks as a telemarketer, which is like being hit on the head with a hammer. Everybody hates telemarketers, rightly so. Please don't be mean to them. Nobody says, "I want to be a telemarketer when I grow up." That job is keeping a lot of people off welfare. So take me off this list.
What did you learn in the job selling septic tanks that proved valuable in writing a book about that dead-end job?
What I learned was that the people who took these jobs were desperate. One of them was a bank manager, and this was the only job he could get now. There were single mothers who brought their babies to the boiler room where we worked and let those babies crawl on that wretched floor because they had no one to care for their children. There are desperate people out there who are trying to work, and they were far, far better people than I am. They were good-humored. They were just trying to stay afloat.
Have you incorporated that part of the story into anything that you've done?
Yes, I have. I have the greatest respect for people in these jobs, and they are far better than I am.
The other job is the mystery shopper. And for most men, I would guess, they don't know what a mystery shopper is.
A mystery shopper, and they do have male mystery shoppers.
Well, I'm sure they do.
Is someone who goes around to the stores. They're hired by the corporate headquarters, and they pose as an average shopper. And there are certain things that you have to do. For instance, when I worked at Barnes & Noble, they would check if you came in and wanted a book. We would have to put the book in your hand. We would have to take you to the section and basically lead you around. We were, of course, horribly understaffed, so it was difficult to do that. And then we had to ask if you had the Barnes & Noble gift card. So these are things that the mystery shopper checks for.
Why is this a good path to work into a mystery?
Because a mystery shopper is the closest thing you will get to a suburban spy. And that's what my character Josie is. And she feels that she's fighting for the rights of Mrs. Minivan, who is the American shopper that no one takes seriously. My mother was a mystery shopper, and she told me that the most invisible woman on earth is a middle-aged woman in a store.
Well, mystery shopping is something that's still going on, obviously, and you've got many more opportunities to put some things on paper about, don't you?
I hope so.
Yeah. Any change in direction coming?
I don't think so. And in fact, there's very little change in mystery shopping. My mother's questionnaire is still being used 40 years later.
Your character, Josie, has not had the best track record with men. The marriage is, can we assume this may be doomed?
No, you cannot. I'm going to try to have a happy marriage in my mystery.
We don't want to give too much away. Elaine Veets, thanks so much for being with me. Let me once again give these places where you're going to be. Tonight at the County Library headquarters on Lindbergh near Highway 6440. That's happening at 7 o'clock, and you're going to have the bridesmaid dress contest taking place there. And the Festus Library is going to be happening tomorrow morning, the Maplewood Library Friday evening, Barnes & Noble on Ladue Road on Saturday morning, the Times and more details on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Elaine, best of luck to you. Congratulations on yet another novel. Good luck with it.
Thank you, Don.
It's great to see you. Tomorrow, join Steve Potter for Cityscape, when he'll talk about a new exhibit at the Pulitzer, exploring the nature of love, the St. Louis Symphony Youth Orchestra's concert and new initiatives, and he'll talk with actor Hal Holbrook, who is appearing in Hannibal this weekend. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, now that Missouri has voted down health exchanges, and we know that the Affordable Care Act will move forward, we'll take a look at what that means for residents of our region. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr and Ariana Tobin. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.